Welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about programming, development, and design through the lens of amazing books, chapter by chapter. We are on the kind of recap final chapter of Refactoring by Martin Fowler, and I am joined, as always, by the amazing JP. Hey, JP, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. Today is the last day of my long weekend, so I took some time off, and so nice. It has been so great to just recharge, not look at Slack, put my computer like underneath my bed, my work computer underneath my bed, and just like not touch it for, what is it? I think day four now or five?
Wow.
No, this is day five, including the weekend. And 2 days ago was like Memorial Day. So it's really just like two extra days off. But all that is to say that I feel so recharged and I feel great.
That's awesome.
I'm living life right now.
But I mean, are you really okay with yourself missing some green squares in your GitHub Git commits?
Okay, so
you wrote code on your time off. Is that your answer?
Yeah, but it was like casual, you know. It wasn't that crazy. It was this side project I'm working with my friend that basically automates text messages that you and I had talked offline about a couple weeks ago.
We were playing with that one a bit. I remember you asking me stuff. So that's cool though. And so it's very much stuff that's just kind of like fun, relaxing kind of. I mean, we write code because we like it. So it makes sense that you'd write some code on your time off. But it's good to get your brain away from work. You had said like put your work computer under the bed. I found lately with my work in life, I found so much value in trying to really be better about boxing my work to a specific device and context. So like I used to like sometimes this is my home office here. And sometimes like I might sit at my home office computer and like play around with design stuff just for like fun or like honestly like watch YouTube sometimes sitting in my office. And more in life, I found so much value in making sure that when I'm at this desk, I'm only doing code for client work. When I'm on this machine, I don't, you know, watch Netflix on the same laptop because like the line between your work and life gets so blurry otherwise. And so I found a lot of value lately in just like not touching my work computer at all when work is done and having like a separation between that. Do you find yourself like, cause otherwise I found myself like at 9 PM, a Slack message comes in. And I like just kind of jump back into work for an hour. And it's like, that's probably not the best way to do that. And I'm not doing my best work and it doesn't really let my brain recharge. Do you struggle with that at all? Like work, life, separation, having it bleed in between?
Yeah, that's okay. I have a follow-up question to that. But the interesting thing is that maybe like six, seven, 8 months ago, I was very close to upgrading my current 13-inch personal laptop. Okay, so my work laptop is this like souped up 15-inch. And my personal computer is this 13-inch 2016 MacBook Pro. And I was very close to upgrading my personal to like a souped up 13-inch so I could like download all the repositories from work, you know, be able to run the servers, do all this and that. And then I ended up not doing it because I am very cheap and it just didn't seem like the move at the time to spend $3,000 on a laptop because the idea was like, okay, I can have my work computer, I can just leave it at work and then I can just have like this souped up machine where I do like my personal things and my work things. And then I ended up not doing that ultimately also because like I don't think I'm technically allowed to do that. I think there's
like technically work repository should be on the work machine probably.
Yes, that probably is the case. So, that being said, it all ended up working out because I feel like if I had done that, it would have been even harder for me to separate work and personal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it kind of like dovetails a little bit on my pick last week, which is the whole distraction-free phone thing. And about like trying to be more present in the moments I'm in. And so that means when I'm working, like try to be 110% in work. But when I'm off and just hanging out with the wife on a date night, like my phone isn't buzzing with Slack notifications and shit like that. Like I'm out and I'm not at work right now. And like that's good. I also like there's some degree of like the whole idea of like work-life balance is just like for millennials doesn't exist. Like we just kind of are our job. And I think that's like kind of okay to some degree that like we work a lot of hours. I think because a lot of us are like picking careers we're very passionate about. So in general, we work a lot and we pick things we're very passionate about. But I've just found like I have been so much more effective by time boxing and by having a separation between like, okay, not in work mode, now in work mode, that it's just been so beneficial. And I think the biggest thing with like having my desk and my computer just be for work is like when I sit down, I dig right in. There isn't this like 10 minutes of distraction, like going and browsing this on Y Combinator or whatever, like just like looking at different stuff, Hacker News, that's what I was thinking of, or like going on Hacker News or going on Twitter, it's like, no, like this is my work machine. I'm at work right now. Like if I want to do that, I can stop work and go take a break and like actually have a break that restores my brain. So I did something similar. I didn't like buy a second laptop, but I bought just like a junky old iPad Air. And so like that is like when I'm off work, like that's what I'll sit and browse Netflix on or read the news or watch YouTube. And so it's like, it's really nice because that doesn't have any work stuff on it. There's no Slack. There's nothing on there. There's not even email set up on it. So it's like literally just like a kickback media do nothing device. And I've got a lot of value over having that kind of third space of like, I am not working right now. I'm doing something else. But yeah, so that's interesting. And I think that's a hard balance in our career, especially because a lot of us work remote. A lot of us like have the ability to work anywhere all the time. And it's easy to just never take time off.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, since like you're a freelancer and you work from home a lot of the times, I imagine you only have one computer. So there isn't really like a work computer and a personal computer.
It's true.
But it does sound like that your computer is like your work. It's like a work computer. So where do you watch
Netflix?
Where do you watch Netflix then? Because I can see Twitter being an iPad thing.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of TV is the short answer, but I watch more YouTube than anything else. Like I bought a house recently, so I'm always watching like house DIY. And so I watch a lot of YouTube. And so that works well on an iPad and it's like not that long form stuff. And like we do have a TV, like not like TV TV, but we have like a physical device that is a TV with a Roku or whatever hooked up to it. So if I want to watch a movie, I can sit down with the wife and watch a movie too. But also say is I think there's a lot of value in that. And actually a small little tweak, like a work thing I found lately that's been so helpful is I realized that Google Chrome has the ability to add profiles into the browser. And I didn't really know that this existed. And so what I did is like, I have an agency email, john@withbetter.com. And I have my personal email, johnsalsrule@gmail.com. And what I did is I just like set up those profiles. And that has like totally changed the game because I'm not constantly like juggling between personal email and work. And like, I literally just close the entire work browser and open up a personal browser, which helps a lot. Like if I need to use my personal machine for something else. So that's one thing that has really helped a lot to kind of get into that work mode. And the other thing, like really trailing off this whole like distraction-free phone, I've very much been leaning into. I have this app on my computer. I've used it as a pick before and it's awesome, but it's called Focus. And it basically like makes you not open any other apps you choose. And so I do that during work time. And so like, that's very much like that is work time at the machine doing that thing. Focus is on, I can't even like go browse Twitter if I wanted to. And it's, there's something nice about like preventing your monkey brain from doing that, like deciding in advance what you want to do and then having the discipline to just stick it out and do that specific thing. Anyway, yeah, so that's enough about work-life balance, I think. What kind of code stuff have you been working on lately? Has there been any interesting problems or challenges in your work or coding explorations recently?
You know, it's been so long since I've been at work, I don't even know.
Nice. Four days, it's all out of your head.
I don't even know what I would... If I had stand-up today with my team, like literally right now, I would just be like, I don't remember what the last thing I worked on was. But I can talk about this project I'm working on with one of my friends. The TLDR is that he is a doctor. He's in his finishing up his second year of residency, and he wants to basically do a study that text messages patients after a surgery so that they can have like all of the information that they would need. And currently, this information, the kind of information that patients are getting messaged is already readily available normally by like a sheet of paper. So like, let's say I go in for, I don't know, a knee surgery or something like that. After I get discharged, they would give me like a piece of paper. And this piece of paper would have stuff on it that's like, hey, you know, on day three, it's like normal for your knee to still be sore. Don't forget to don't do rigorous exercises like,
right. Or like weightlifting. After week one, you don't have to keep it elevated when you sleep anymore. Like there's all this like time-based little pieces of information. That's, it reminds me of, I had poison oak really bad lately and I got one of those sheets when I left and they're like, okay, for the next 24 hours, do these things. In 72 hours, if it's still feeling this way, let us know. So that makes sense that as they leave a hospital, there's time-based little pieces of information about the procedure they had.
Yes. And so
makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. That is 100% a good summary of it. And the reason that it is such a pain point is because I don't know if you've ever had like a surgery like this or something where like by the time you leave the hospital, you just have all your bags and then you have like, you have all this paper that it's like, it gets lost and you have like all this stuff. And then you get home and you're like, shit, where's that paper that says like all the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing for the next like 6 weeks of my life?
Or I die.
Yeah. And then what happens is that you lose it inevitably and you're just like still not sure. So you end up calling the hospital and then you just like ask all these questions and then you get put through this like feedback loop of like, oh, you have to reach this number, you have to reach that number. You finally like talk to the doctor and they're just like, you're going to be fine. Just chill out and everything will be okay. So that is basically the problem that is being solved. And so I was working on this app this past weekend that was basically just a mechanism to send out scheduled text messages.
Oh, nice.
And
so like when the patient leaves, you can just set up the 4 or 5 text messages they should get over the next 2 weeks. And then they just get what they need when they get it. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been really fun having this like greenfield project because I get to start from scratch and I get to do all of the, you know, the best practices that we've been talking about for the last like two years on this podcast.
In a totally clean environment, right?
Yeah. And so it's been really fun just like going through like tracer code and then going through like, you know, a bunch of like different like prototyping and then finally like making it like production ready and then like going through like some, I actually did some TDD, you know, so that was actually kind of
nice.
Cool. It's been really interesting because I'm so used to this like agile workflow that I've been working with at OpenListing/OpenDoor for the last year, where things are sort of like set in stone for me already. So like my PM comes up with what tasks our team has to do and puts that in like a sprint. And then we have sprint planning. And so we all get to choose from this board, like, oh, I want to do this and that. And then like, so-and-so is going to do this and that. And then we all like go ahead and like tackle it. But this has been such a fun experience for me because like, I have to do everything and I have to prioritize like, okay, do I really need to make the front end look like great? Mm-hmm. No, not really. My friend doesn't really give a shit either, but it would be great for me to spend some time on like testing. And so like, I've just been, I don't like create issues or anything like that because I feel like it would be a little bit much and potentially overwhelming for myself to like make issues and then close them just for myself. But like I have like on my README, I just have like a little to-do list and it's been really fun being able to like prioritize like, okay, this and this needs to happen. These are the nice to haves and these are like the like, you know, really nice to haves.
Sure. Yeah. That's cool. And I think you're totally right. It sounds super pragmatic. Like, why have an entire like GitHub process and workflow for just yourself? It's like, well, it might be a little much. Like, it's not even like you're trying to learn that. It's like, you know that process and you can hold this app in your head for now. So it's just like not needed. But that's really cool to be able to work on a small thing like that that has a smaller scope and like deliver it really cleanly. And that's really cool. That's awesome. I just did a handoff for a similar, like it was only a month long engagement with a client. They came with me. They're like, I want the absolute cheapest app you can build in a month that solves this problem space. And it was really cool because like the founder has a big vision of where he wants to take the app. But it was really interesting to come up with the two problems that we're actually solving now and just solve it really, really well. And of course, like it was all like greenfield and fun. And in this, so it's just a simple Rails web app that we built, but there was a lot of like interactions that we needed to do that would be kind of hard to support with vanilla JS and like some like state, like real time updates types of data binding and stuff that we wanted to do. And it was a really good opportunity to play with JavaScript on Rails and start pushing it and exploring that space. And so it was really fun to like use Stimulus and Vue. And I even played with Rivets JS to like find what I thought was best. Cause I've been wanting to do a lot of exploration for a while because like I definitely approach a lot of projects more server side, more kind of old school Rails approach, where it's just like everything's a page reload, everything's a form, which I still very much believe in that in the early days. But there's certain interactions that are really well served to be done without a page reload. And there's some optimizations that go a long way. And I don't think it has to be everywhere. And I don't think that you have to do React for absolutely every single app. But it's been a really cool journey to like have a app that's totally green, no one else is in it, and I can just kind of like shove different code in it, rewrite it a couple different ways because the scope's so small, to be able to figure out the best path forward. So it was really cool. And I ended up landing on Vue for it and did the whole thing in Vue, but I got a lot out of Stimulus and Rivets and everything else that I played with. And I've played a lot with React, but in this case, it was just like too much. Like there's plenty of templates, Rails templates, that's just fine to have. But that was a really cool journey to try to find that best practice of like what I'm going to do for now to try to be a little bit more modern in my approach and mixing in more JavaScript into my daily day-to-day development, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of those things that like absolutely just needs JavaScript is like drag and drop reordering.
Yeah,
and like,
for sure.
Like there's no way you can like get away with a page reload. I think the interesting thing is, and this I guess is sort of like a little tiny segue into the book, and maybe really just our podcast in general is doing this like greenfield project. I think the biggest thing I've learned in my like two and a half year journey as a software engineer is that like you should really just do things like very pragmatically. Like when you start a greenfield project, it was so hard for me to start this thing because of all the things I wanted to do. I was like, oh, I'm going to add React. I'm going to add, you know, authentication. It's going to be like an API thing. It's going to be like a headless API just so that like potentially I might want to do like a React Native app, and I'm going to like do all this like Circle CI stuff. I'm going to have all these like pre-commit hooks. And then like I was like paralyzed because I didn't end up writing any code. And it wasn't until like that first day that I just opened up the README and I was like, okay, I need to just design this app. I wrote like what the models were. I started like very, very tiny. And I was like, you know what? I don't need a CI CD thing. I don't need that. Right. Like it's like the app is literally so small. I could just run Rails test every time before I
every commit. Time you commit. Right.
Yeah. It like doesn't matter. And you can't get like paralyzed. And so the more I started doing like little tiny things and adding things as I needed them and not like in anticipation of things, I started to make so much more progress, and I realized like this is sort of like what we've been talking about on this podcast for the last like year is like do things pragmatically, do things as you need them. Don't over optimize. Like, you know, you might not even need capybara. So like don't add all these like random like you don't need all these random gems just because it's like you're familiar with these tools. Like you can push your tools to the limits and just add things as you need them. And like I've gotten so far in the last 4 days by just making these little tiny steps.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's so much value in, I like the idea of pushing your tooling to the limits of like first, like bump into the wall of what you can't do. Cause it's easy when starting a new project, like immediately spin up, you know, error reporting and CI and all this stuff, but you're so right. It's like, just start writing code. And I think one of the biggest things I've learned in just my software and just even journey working with entrepreneurs and startups, it's just like, do what you can now, today, like make traction today. And it's really easy, especially for a lot of the founders I work with, to be like, well, if I can't make version 5 today, I don't want to build it because it's not what my vision is. And so it's really trying to be super pragmatic and pick like, what is the thing that we can do today that's better than yesterday that moves your business forward, moves this code base forward? You know, on the subject of refactoring, kind of jumping into the book, like you don't want to stop and do a refactor. Like that was not at all the intention of this book. And I was expecting to learn how to like do a refactor, like stop and refactor code base, but that wasn't at all. In fact, like he hates that approach. It's all about small refactors, everything staying green. And just every time you're in the code base, constantly making those little changes. And you can stop and do those refactors, but it's not like you just pull everything apart and tear it all out. It's just you kind of slowly organize things. Like to use the metaphor of a messy garage, like he does not think you should rip everything out of the garage and then put it all back perfectly. He's just like, organize this shelf. Like you're here, work on the shelf, fix this shelf. Like organize these wrenches and screws. And I really like this approach. And it's so much less intimidating knowing like, okay, what's step one? What can I do right now? What's the baby step to move this thing forward? And it's funny that you kind of grabbed onto that too, because I totally couldn't agree more that that's just so valuable of the refactoring or the approach is what's the smallest thing we can do now that leaves it better than it was. And just do that again and again and again every day over time. And all of a sudden you look down and you're like, wow, this thing is super nice.
Yeah, it's funny because I used to think that refactoring had to be this ginormous, huge, big thing. But literally a refactor can just be renaming a variable and just so that you get more clarity. And that could be it. Like you can have a PR that refactors a variable name and has like a 2-line diff and that's it. And I think these small incremental changes build up to something so much greater than like what you would expect. And I think the funny thing is this is the exact opposite of like what Marie Kondo, because you had mentioned like, how do you clean a garage? No, you don't like rip everything out, sort everything, right, and then like throw everything away and then keep everything that you need. That is like, that's like the Marie Kondo approach, whereas refactoring
or the minimalist approach. Like, yeah. It's like get rid of everything instantly and then go from there.
Yeah. It's like, you can just leave it better than it was and that will be totally fine. And I think that's like, I don't know. I think pragmatism is just so important in the line of work that we do.
Yeah. And I think on that same subject, I always, like, oftentimes working with the agency, working with my team, I would often assign a ticket that's like, hey, let's build this feature. And while we're at it, like, let's rework the way this thing works. And I would, or even for my own work, I would think about, oh, I want to add this kind of real-time messaging. So I'm going to refactor the underlying messaging patterns while I'm at it, because I'm adding this JavaScript-y messaging. So it's like a good time to change it. But just the, if there's only one takeaway I have, it's refactor and add functionality separately. Do not try to do these things at the same time. And it's just, it has proved to be the right direction again and again. And every time I fight that instinct and try to refactor while I'm making improvements, I always regret it. Like, there hasn't been a single time that's gone well for me when I tried to merge those two things. So in this book, he talks about like the two hats, one about adding functionality and adding features, and the other hat of wearing for that functionality. I think it's really important to kind of balance between those two hats. So that was one really good takeaway I got for sure.
Yeah, and it's definitely one thing, I think the biggest takeaway I got from this book in particular, and something that I always harp on in our like sprint retrospective. So every 2 weeks we like reflect on the sprint, and it's like what went well and then what didn't go well and what can we continue doing. And there have been times where we do these like large projects and these like large kind of refactory things. And I always try to stress that, like, there's so much value in being able to stop at any time. So, like, you should be able to get to the next working state of your application very soon. So, like, the larger amount of space between point A and point B being, like, your app still works, point A being your app still works, like, the longer it takes to get there, like, the more sucky it is for everyone, because
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you like, because when you're, I've been that person too, where I'm like, oh my God, where is the light at the end of this tunnel? And you get so close to just being like, fuck it, I'm going to delete this branch and like, just punt on this entire thing. It's like just not worth it. So I think the very small steps in everything you do is very important.
Yeah, I think the small steps and consistency is huge. And I like the idea of keeping things working is so important, because the bigger that gap is, I think it really reflects just poor sprint planning. Like, you didn't plan this execution well enough if you're in a broken state for 2 weeks. Something was wrong in the planning. And I've been that person missing that planning a ton of times. The other one that I've gotten a lot of value of implementing is not worrying about performance while refactoring. Just like not even thinking about performance. Thinking about the clarity of the code first and the clarity and the usability of the code first beyond performance. And just every single time when I do that, if there's any performance issue, it's easier to tweak with the refactored code anyway. And I oftentimes would be like, well, that's working and it's working pretty well right now, so I'm not going to touch it because this way is not going to be as performant. But like, it just hasn't made a difference. And it's just a bad excuse. That's kind of what I've learned, at least at the scale that my stuff is, which is thousands of consistent users, not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. I think even at different scale, to some degree, all of our tooling and servers and everything around us is so much better these days that performance is not the number one concern in general. It's very rare that I push something out that creates, you know, more than a few hundred milliseconds page load. And so it's just like, okay, we're probably fine on performance. We probably don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. In my experience too, the things that you think are going to cause bottlenecks end up not being the cause of bottlenecks. There have been so many times where I was like, oh, but that's a nested loop. And my coworker's like, yeah, who cares? It'll be fine.
It's fine. And give it a shot.
Yeah, and it ends up being fine. And then I'm like, oh, but the page load is 4 seconds. And then you like dig into it, and it's like it ends up being some other thing. Where like,
right, it's not even the thing you thought it was.
Yeah. So most of the time, I think that's very true. Is like, you shouldn't worry too much about that. You should cross that bridge when you get there. I mean, obviously, don't be reckless in like deliberately making N+1 queries, but you know,
right,
most of the time at the scale that we operate. And I would say that we operate at a pretty large scale. And even the things that I'm like, oh, we need to optimize for this, it ends up being very negligible, almost like not even that important.
It's just crazy like how good everything that we run on is. Like, running on an AWS server right now, it's just all, we have such amazing access to just limitless server power just right here from my laptop. It's so cool to live in the future the way we do. So the other thing that I thought was really cool about this book is its format. that it's like this repository of all these different refactors. Cause I have grabbed this book in my day to day life multiple times and just gone like, oh, like when I was skimming through this big repository of different types of refactors, I remember that one. How was that one structured? And I have gotten a lot of value in having good, consistent resources to pull from. Like another resource is I have this book on testing Rails. I'll put it in the show notes. I forgot the name of it, but that one is one that I constantly grab for like, oh, how do I set up this test efficiently? And what's a good way to set up this test? Another one that I've gotten a ton of value in is this Patterns of Enterprise Application Architecture. It's another Martin Fowler book actually, and it looks exactly like refactoring.
It does.
But it's super thick. And it's this book that basically talks about all these different just design patterns. So it's things like the decorator or presenter pattern, query objects, service objects, a gateway object, like all these different kind of like high level patterns, like technical architectural patterns, kind of the stuff we talked about with domain driven design. But it's just been really interesting to be able to pull from a repository of this kind of stuff and that format in general. And there's another website, actually, it's patterns.com for like user experience patterns. And I just feel like having these kind of resources to pull from your day to day to start the conversation and get your brain moving. Because I've even found with working from this Patterns of Enterprise Application Architecture book, which is like super wonky and nerdy, but even if I just pick a pattern and start to implement what I'm trying to do and realize it's the wrong pattern, it just gets me going in like figuring out a pattern. And finding the wrong pattern is really valuable in trying to figure out how to structure something because it helps you get to the right pattern. Well, like, okay, I know this isn't a query object, so I need to think about a different way to approach this. And so I've in general, like trying to find really good resources of whether it be user experience design or, you know, books or different resources on refactoring. I've just found a lot of benefit lately in just like grabbing them and having quick reference for these things like in hard copy on my shelf. I've just had a ton of value in that lately.
Yeah, totally. I think there's tons of value in putting a name to things because like, let's say I've never even heard of a gateway object or I don't know what it is that you said, but like, let's say I knew what that is. What if like I knew what that was? I just didn't know that it had a name to it. Now it's like
you do know what it is.
Now yeah. I have something to like Google, and yeah, I'm sure
a gateway
there's like blogs
object
and
is like a can, like what you can and can't do. So it's gotcha. Access control is a gateway object, and like there was so much of this stuff that I didn't know what it was, and it's like oh, now I know exactly like where that lands, and some of the lines between some of these objects are very blurry. Like you can have something that's a gateway and a mapper. Like there's just these concepts that you can build off of, and it's been super interesting. And this is not a book you read start to finish. This Patterns of Enterprise Application Architecture. It's just not its format. I mean, neither is refactoring. These books are intended, these two Martin Fowler books are intended to be that kind of guide and resource to just like inspire your thinking. And I'm doing quite a bit of design lately, whether it's UX or aesthetic design, and having just like good resources of different design books like has been really valuable for different logos and different just layouts and things like that. Like I mentioned, that patterns website, it's pttrns.com, is like a really good place for that. Yeah, I've just gotten a lot of value out of that thing. The other thing that is like a weird, interesting, quasi-related work thing lately is I've been playing a lot with these pre-built sketch files that you buy. So I found this place called craftwork.design, but there's a bunch of other ones. And it's really like they just have these meticulously set up sketch files that use all, like they leverage every single part of Sketch that like I wouldn't even know how to set up the file properly to leverage them in this way, to where like I can change a color in one place and it changes the color across all the files and formats, and it uses all the symbols and stuff. But it's cool because in the same way that you can use like Bootstrap docs or Tailwind docs as like an inspiration for different UI components, I've found a ton of value in these different pre-built Sketch UI components, not only for like efficiency and building things out, but just like getting my brain going in the right direction. And then from a workflow standpoint, it's crazy like how fast I can change all the stuff. Like it's almost working like with CSS when you like use Sketch in this way. And I've just got so much efficiency gains like from that kind of approach as a starting point. And it's not templates, like that's not what this is. It's structuring the file to be component based and like really use what Sketch offers from like that UI functionality standpoint. So it's been super cool. So craftwork.design, they have like a free that could get you halfway there, but I think there's a lot of value in kind of digging into the tool and getting a good starting point to get your brain going, whether that's a repository of a book that's got some different design patterns, or whether it's kind of like a starting place, whether it be a CSS framework or like a Sketch file that gets you going. I think there's a huge amount of value in that. Throwing it all out if you need to, but also like using it. Like someone thought about this as a system. Like let's try to use that and think in systems.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, it's definitely been a different like mental model for me for like how I approach like reading and learning, because I'm very much like the kind of person who tries to read a book from start to finish. But refactoring has definitely been like a choose your own adventure, because it like,
yeah,
it will like tell you like, oh, on page 300 is inline function. And then on page 324 is blah, 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 blah. And you have to like, and you're really like flipping back and forth. But I think that's like to emphasize the fact that this is not like meant to be a book that you read start to finish. It's more of like a dictionary, right? And you should see it as such, as like just a resource where you can flip through the pages and thumb through and be like, oh yeah, this is kind of exactly what I need. And it's cool because it, in some ways, it has like hyperlinks that like,
yeah,
because you can like go from like different, it's like, oh, and this previously used to be this, and this is kind mm-hmm. of similar to this thing. And so you like go through the different types of refactors and you're like all over the book, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So all in all, I would give refactoring. We should start rating the books at the end when we're done. I give it 2 curly brackets. That's what I give it.
Yeah.
I don't know out of what. But it's been awesome. I really have enjoyed it. Got a lot out of it. And hopefully us kind of jibber-jabbing across its contents has been useful to you. I hope so.
Yeah. So we said this was like the final chapter, but not really. It's more of like the final episode for this book.
Yeah, just because we're like looking like, okay, we could like continue to go through specific refactors, but we'll leave that to you guys. It's more of intended to be a resource in that way. Yeah. I feel like if we start going through these individual refactors, it's a bit like reading the dictionary from start to finish, and it just doesn't work.
It'd be like, today we're on letter L. It's like,
exactly. It's like, what? No, this isn't working. So awesome. Do you have any picks for us this week, JP?
Yes. Kind of. I have 2 picks. Well, I have a couple picks. It's just,
okay, we'll let you. Just jump in.
Okay. My first pick, I think, is something you've picked before. I bought this time timer thing, and it's been so great to just have something where you can like time box your time much easier. Cause there are a lot of times where I'll be like, okay, I'm going to time box this for 20 minutes. And I'm either on Twitter for 10 minutes of that, or I'm working for like 45 minutes and I haven't eaten anything in like the last 4 hours. So like this, I think this tool is like really good in helping you do that, because it's like nice and visual. And yes, it's like a very expensive kitchen timer, but it's really cool. And visually, I think like it's like the best looking kitchen timer out of the ones I've seen.
I'm with you. Yeah. And so what JP is holding up, we're on a video call right now, is a little timer called the time timer. And I think I have picked it in the past, but it's basically a kitchen timer that allows you to visually set any interval from 5 minutes to an hour. And it sits on your desk and kind of counts down. So if you haven't seen, check them out, because I get a lot of value in like having that thing on my desk that physically represents my focus and like reminds me to be there. So it's like a physical object, this time timer thing. Cool. I've got a pick that you may not know. Google snuck in a feature into Gmail that I've been using the hell out of and loving, which is send later in Gmail. And I love it because, you know, working, you know, the job that I do, having a lot of clients, if I email my clients at like 9 p.m., even if I am working, they expect me to like reply to emails in the future at 9 p.m. Or like I oftentimes wake up super early, like 5:30 in the morning. And like, I want to send an email to a client, but I don't really want them to know that I'm working at 5:30 in the morning, because I don't want there to be an expectation of reply. So it's really nice to be able to schedule an email for like 8:30 or 9:30, or, you know, there's been recently I will write code. I know the CI is going to pass. It just needs to deploy. And I'll literally schedule the email for an hour later. And I'll be like, this is live now. But when I actually hit send on the email, it's not live, but I know it's going live. So I've just got a ton of value in the ability to like future schedule emails. And so just pinging you, if you don't know that's there, like make sure that's enabled for you. And it's super useful to me, at least. I've got a lot out of it. What's your other pick?
Last pick is, have you heard of this highway called Angeles Crest?
Yes, it's beautiful.
It is so fun. So yesterday I took my Porsche up there and just drove. It's like, okay, if you know me, if you've ever driven in a car with me, you'll know that I'm very much the kind of person that goes the speed limit. One, because I don't want to pay for a ticket, and two, because it's more gas efficient to drive like that.
It's so engineer of you.
Yeah, you know, it's like you got to keep your RPMs consistent. Anyways, I was driving through these like windy roads, and where the speed limit is like anywhere between 35 and 45 miles per hour. And I was just blasting through these. I like looked at the speedometer and I was like, whoa, I did not even realize how fast I was going here. It was just so fun. I was like grinning like a stupid idiot the whole time. Like I could not, awesome, you could not wipe that smile off my face. So it was like just
day off cruising the Porsche. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And it's like literally maybe like 10 miles from like Glendale. It's like so close. And it like is on all of these lists of like best places to drive your car in California. Angeles Crest is one of them. And it was so fun. I can't wait to like take my car back up there again.
That's awesome. Yeah, springtime in LA. That's an awesome spot for it. Super cool. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We will be back. We're going to take one or two episode break as we settle into our new book, which we will be announcing soon. Actually, did we pick a book? I don't remember if we did or not, JP.
We did. We did. There was a text message, I think, about...
All right. We'll figure out what that next book is. So thanks for listening, and we will see you guys next week. If you want to learn more about our show, you can go to iterationpodcast.com. There you can find show notes. You can find our Twitters, and you can reach out there. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Peace.